and welcome to the show. This is actually part B with Kevin Day, again at the Ozark Mountain UFO conference. By the way, I just highly recommend. It was such a beautiful area and we had such a great time. So without further ado, I'm just going to run this interview I did with Kevin. Here we go. Kevin Day, how are you? Glad to have you again.
I'm very happy to be here. I truly am.
Yeah.
And, you know, it wasn't easy getting here, I have to tell you.
Yeah, I know. You got stuck, the plane.
Yeah, we had to deboard the plane in Phoenix and hydraulic leak on the wing. And
oh, geez.
That's a whole nother story.
Yeah, but you made it. And
we made
good.
It. Yep.
Yep. So you and I go way back.
Yes, sir.
I talked way back when the Nimitz was first talked about, the Nimitz, the Tic Tac incident, whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
I had Robert Powell.
Robert Powell was
on my show, and you wrote a comment, and you two, he verified who you were, and the whole thing blew up from there. Look at all that's happened since then. But you've been on all types of media, and
I got to tell you, sir, I didn't ask for this.
Yeah, I know.
In no way, shape, or form.
Yeah,
I'm just as astonished as anyone else.
Now I remember. Now there's a lot of people that are kind of new to this, so we'll have to just do nutshells of here and there.
Sure.
But I remember you telling me that you were working at a golf course and you saw something on the TV. Is that right?
That is correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can I tell the whole story?
Sure, so people sort
of provide some bookends to this whole thing?
Yeah.
For me, this story actually begins in 1988. And I'm going to get emotional.
Yeah.
I know that already.
Yeah.
When Tic Tac happened, it was my last time on a ship in uniform. I was getting ready to retire.
Oh, yeah.
When the ship pulled back into San Diego, I was transferring. And I was the senior grader on the ship for the strike group for air defense. And the rest of the strike group was getting ready to go on deployment. And this was our last check in the block, if you will. And we had done months of planning for this ADEX, we call it Air Defense Exercise. And, you know, that's when it happened. It was just bizarre, to put it lightly. And one of the reasons why I think I saw them, if you will, I don't know, it sounds crazy to say these things. It really does. And for viewers, listen, I totally get it. I was the same way for a long time. If I would have been speaking like this during my military career, I would have looked at him, that person, like people looked at me. Like I had been doing drugs or had gone crazy or whatever. And it was really hurt really hard because I wasn't any of those things, you know? I was just doing my job. We have a flight safety risk off the coast, and we got clowned. No one would believe us. There was cartoons in the newspapers in strike group clowning all of us. Sure, you guys intercepted UFOs, and every time, that's all anyone heard was the word UFO. They didn't hear anything about flight safety. And that really pissed me off. You know why? Because my first deployment, the first time I was on a ship, 1988, my first deployment, USS Vincennes, July 3rd, 1988. And now some of your viewers and listeners might remember this. We were in the Persian Gulf, it was the name of it at the time, and our helicopter strayed over Iranian international waters. And rightfully so, you know, they responded. And I'm not sure really exactly what provoked them to fire, but they did. They started firing at our helicopter. So we went to general quarters and they started coming at us. So we engaged them. And we ended up sinking eight of the bog hammers, I believe. And I think that's eight or nine of them. And it was a day at sea no one would ever forget, trust me. I mean, can you imagine, like, the bridge crew's up there trying to get our helo back on board as they're spinning and dodging these mad as hell boats coming at us.
Jeez.
Yeah, it was a real, real shit, no deal. And right during that time, and you know, I was a junior guy, I had nothing at all to do with air defense. My first deployment, I was as close as I am to you right now, that camera right there, doing a non-involved navigation function, which was the early version of what we called JOTS, a Joint Operation Tactical System, really a big navigation system, a network system, so we're all sharing the same grid. And that was my job. And we went to general quarters, happened to be on watch, captain comes down, things got pretty nasty quick, and all of a sudden an aircraft launched out of Iran and started coming directly at us. And about a year before, the USS Stark got hit by an Iranian F-1, shot an Exocet missile and killed 37 U.S. sailors.
Remember.
Mm. Yeah. And this was July 3rd, 1988, and the next day was our national holiday, July 4th. Mm. So, you know, I wasn't in intel, but it's not really hard to figure out, you know, that's probably a key date to keep your eyes open, right? Mm. And that's when this thing launched, and all this was going on during that day. So go figure, right? And there was confusing identification coming back, and unfortunately, shot down a commercial airliner. Mm. 296 people.
Oh, wow. Mm. Jeez.
I know. That's why I'm here right now.
Mm. Yeah.
My whole career, that's what kept me in the Navy. I almost got out. I was, one of my best friends in college was Iranian. Mm. We used to take martial arts classes together. Really, really good people, you know? Mm. I know it's gonna shock a lot of folks hearing this, but there's good people there.
Of course.
There really is.
You know, I've been to Russia a number of times, and you know, I'm just making, you know, you can think everyone in Russia is like Putin, but when you meet them, there's a saying, it's hard to hate up close. And I think it might have been Michelle Obama or someone, I don't know who said it. But anyway, when you get to know people, you know, one-on-one, there's beautiful people everywhere, no matter where they're from. So,
what the religion is.
And it's what, you know, maybe the control of the population is that turns people into doing the things they do. I don't know.
I don't know either. Mm. I know we can fix it.
I hope so.
Yeah,
we're in a mess now.
Yeah. So I'm glad I got through that part of it. During my whole career, I was pretty vigilant about calm air, to say the least. You know, I mothered the calm air lines in lanes. You know, you can ask anyone I serve with; they'll tell you the same thing. And for good reason. I had good reason to do that. You know.
Yeah.
So going back to the present in 2004, you know, this was many years later, of course. I just happened to be up in combat. I was up there anyway a lot during my off watch hours, because I would just be up there. I was, you know, where else are you going to go on a small ship, right? And I was either up in the operations office up above, and I was up in combat. Combat Information Center, CIC, we just called it combat for short, and I was looking at the radar that we saw these objects coming from sub-Earth orbit, or not, lower space, if you will, 80,000 feet. I won't reveal the actual altitudes and stuff, but they came in groups of 5 to 10 at a time, and then just like that fast. They would come down as a group up and set station off the coast at Catalina Island. 28,000 feet, and they would sit there for a time, and then one by one, they would traverse our Whiskey 291, which was our operating area off the coast of San Diego, and they would leave Catalina Island, and they would go all the way down to an island called Guadalupe Island off the coast of Mexico. And I thought they were there to observe the whales, the gray whales, because gray whales migrate this, there probably is a connection, by the way. And I thought they were here to say hi to the whales. I just had this overwhelming feeling. Huh. But deep inside me, I knew they weren't hostile. No way. Anyone you talked to that was actually there, up close and personal, like you just had said, you won't find hate in them. This was the most benevolent thing I've ever experienced. It was a feeling of benevolence. They loved us, if you will. And it was sobering, to say the least. And so additional aircraft launched. We, Captain comes down to combat, because we were gonna do our big exercise. One of the reasons why we went out there was to an air defense exercise, because we were, you know, the whole purpose of going over there as a strike group is, you know, to defend, and that definitely involves air defense, right? And we had done I had planned a big, huge exercise. It had been briefed it for months and planned it for months, literally. And the way strike group air defense works is, if this is the aircraft carrier, and this direction is a notional threat, right? We put stations in the sky in the way. We call them combat air patrol stations. I don't know if I'm going off your camera view or not. And everyone that launches knows where they're going already. It's secret, you know? We don't tell the newspaper about any of this, of course, you know? It's classified. And so I pulled the captain down. He came down to combat, Captain Smith, and I said, "Hey, sir, you know, we've been tracking these things for a week now." And at that time, we probably had tracked maybe right around 80 or so of these successive groups coming down and going through our operating area.
Would you think, I'm sorry, would you think that you could comfortably say that there were about 80 total, or it could have been repetitiously counted?
No, there was 100 total.
You think there was about 100?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing is, they all came down from space right off Catalina, and they all disappeared at exactly the same spot in the sky, about 60 miles north of Guadalupe Island. And according to the fishermen that were interviewed by Lou Elizondo when he went out there after I told him his story, is apparently to them, their attitude was like, "Good guys, about someone came out here and paid attention to this. We've been talking about this for a long, long, long time." Uh-huh. Duh, right?
Wow.
Apparently, these things went straight down into the water.
Really? Wow. I wouldn't doubt
it. I wasn't there. I don't know if that's true, but that's what I'm hearing.
Yeah.
And so anyway, we suspended training because I convinced Captain Smith, "Hey, sir, I'm gravely concerned here, because if we launch and I take control and I end up hitting one of these bad boys, someone's going to ask you, sir, and me, why we were so damn curious." Right?
Yeah.
So he looks at me and says, "You're right, Senior Chief. Intercept and VID." The whole air side was like, "Yeah." No, you don't do that on the ship, right? But I could see it in everyone's eyes, because everyone wanted to intercept these things really badly, right?
Yeah, I would think so.
We took control of Fast Eagle. It was Commander Fravor. And drove him to the nearest object. He gets in the same vertical piece of sky on a radar display. It looks like one, you know, in a 2D display, it looks like one spot in the sky now.
Like a merge?
And we don't look at raw radar. Mm-hmm. Everything has symbology assigned to it. Like friendly is one shape, unknown is another shape, hostile is another shape. Mm-hmm. And air has one shape, surface has one shape, subsurface has another shape. They may even have space shapes. I don't know. It's been many, many years. Anyway, we take control, and I was the supervisor. And my junior controller, who, by the way, is finally coming public. I won't mention the name because out of respect for them, and there's another officer on the ship, is also coming public about this finally.
Good.
Yeah, and I'm not going to reveal names here. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah.
So anyway, we take control of Fast Eagle, drive him to the closest object. He gets in the merge plot position, and bam, right then. This object, whatever the heck it was, drops from 20,000 feet, and that's his altitude. I remember 28 for some reason, but we'll go with his number, right? Because he was right there. And that thing drops from, and you got to remember who this was. This guy was Billy Badass in a jet, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was very good at what he did. Mm-hmm. This thing drops in 0.78 seconds and sets station about 50 feet above the water. So he goes chasing down, he leaves Alex Dietrich up high, he goes chasing it down, and he goes down and down and down, and this thing recognizes him.
Yeah.
And he does a dogfight. You should have heard him on the radio, and he broke protocol. Mm-hmm. Normally you don't hear this kind of thing on a tactical radio system, right? He's like, oh my God, oh my God, I'm engaged.
Wow.
You gotta remember who this is.
Yeah.
Top Gun badass, right? Mm. Been in combat, you know?
Yeah.
The best of the best.
Yeah.
Saying this on the radio, and we are all just shocked. And according to him, and we saw it on radar, it disappeared right in front of him. Mm. Those are his words.
Yeah.
And you know what happened? I wasn't actually looking at the radar. I was up at the front table looking at the large screen displays and working with the front table, trying to keep notes of this whole thing. And I hear on the radio, all of a sudden, the air controller says, and he broke protocol too, because we were so shocked. He said, sir, you're not going to believe this, but that thing is now at your cap station. Let that sink in for a minute. Remember how I described there's several different cap stations?
Like somehow it knew.
Where his assigned cap station was.
Yeah, that's so bizarre.
It is.
Yeah.
And for years I struggled with that, and I finally realized it was a message. They knew our intentions.
Hmm.
Yeah. And I finally had the epiphany when we were standing on that rooftop in SoCal doing the movie A Terror in the Sky, Caroline Corey. Very beautiful person.
Yeah.
I respect her like you can't believe. We had all this gear from David Mason set up. You know, you name it, it was up there. What a brilliant man that is, too, by the way, just so you know.
Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, there was stuff up there I had no idea even what it did and does, you know. A lot of it had to be explained to me.
Yeah.
But I immediately got it, you know, even though I couldn't operate it. And guess what happened? Yeah. We didn't know that anything was going to happen. We were just went there on a whim, essentially. But we, you know, went there in the right time of year and all that stuff, based on my recommendation. And guess what happened? Yeah. They showed up.
Yeah. Yeah, now, I watched the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I've had Dave
on. We had
Dave
a lot of radar.
Yeah.
All kinds of equipment. They recorded 600 hours of data. Yeah. And there are still papers being academic review process that are about to come out, I hope. And so I figured out, Matthew Zeidog he's a quantum physicist out of New York University, right?
Yeah,
he walks up to me and says, "Hey, Kev, I got a question for you." I said, "What's that, sir?" He says, "Do you think that intention has anything to do with this?"
Hmm.
And I looked at him, I said, "Wow, yeah.
It could, yeah.
That's why this thing went to the cap station, isn't it?"
Hmm. Yeah.
It wanted to give me the message.
Hmm.
Or, God, I just said the word me, and I don't mean it that way.
I know what you mean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I was wearing those shoes. Okay.
Yeah.
And I finally figured out what that has to be. And it makes a lot of sense if you think about this. Let me run you through my logic on this, and this might be brand new for a lot of people. I'm even telling physicists about this, and it's the first time they've ever heard it, if you can believe that. And we heard Nick Pope yesterday talk about the Big Bang, and now there's an alternate theory, the steady state, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't matter, according to my questions I'm about to ask you. It doesn't matter in any case. In the case that it was a Big Bang, or in the case of a steady state, I have a question. Was it intentional or unintentional?
Huh. Yeah.
I don't know either.
Yeah.
And no one does, right? So we have to assign it 50-50, statistically, right?
Mm.
It's an unknown unknowable, right? Yeah. It's 50-50. Someone's looking in. So so let's go from there. Let's say, yeah, it was intentional. Okay. Given that case, what happened to the intender?
Hmm. Yeah.
Did the intender choose to survive? Or did the intender choose a cosmic suicide?
Hmm.
Hmm. Let's say the intender of the Big Bang chose survival. In what form?
Hmm.
In a benign state or as an active state? Hmm. Let's say it's an active state. We know there's four fundamental forces in the universe, right? We've got gravity, we've got strong nuclear, we got weak nuclear, and we have electromagnetism. Hmm. I believe there's a fifth. And I've taken the liberty to call it intention. Hmm. And all force carriers have, or all fundamental forces have force carriers assigned to them. So I'm calling the force carrier of intention intentatons. Hmm. And I believe that UAP or UFO, whatever you choose to call them, I prefer UFO, I think they are engineered from the fundamental force of intention. Hmm. Doesn't that answer a lot of questions?
Hmm. It's very interesting.
Because these objects were alive. They didn't need pilots. On a nano scale, they're alive machines, just like you and I.
There's a lot of people that believe that over the years that I've talked to.
Dr. Jack Sarfati, by the way, or I'm saying his name wrong, Arfati. I mean,
I think, yeah, I know who you mean. So yeah. I've got a couple of questions.
Please go for it. That's why I'm here.
So I'm on a panel once a week, and I'm with four military guys. I'm the only non-military. And it's called the UAP Crossfire. And I also prefer UFO. That's why my show's name, Podcast UFO.
Right.
But anyway, the three other hosts are all ganging up on me saying that the Tic Tacs were our secret program, mm-hmm. and that they did that just to test how the Navy would react to it. Mm-hmm. And I say I don't believe that. I don't believe that at all. And so we argue about it all the time. Not argue, you know, we discuss it. It's a crossfire. Mm-hmm. But those three are all saying it's our own secret military. And yes, they do test us on, surprisingly test it. And I would say, well, couldn't that, you know, cause an accident of some kind, or people could be killed?
I'm interested to hear what they said about that part. Did they have an answer?
I can't really recall, unfortunately, but I mean, I could look back. Well,
that's why they're wrong, because there is no way in hell that we are going to do that to ourselves. This wasn't listed in the notice to air mariners, the NOTAMs, right? Mm-hmm. It's supposed to be published, right? Someone should have briefed me. Yeah. Hey, Kevin, or Senior Chief, we've got an additional exercise layered on top of yours. Don't be alarmed.
Yeah. Right?
Because you're exactly right. It presented a safety of flight risk. Mm. And it ended up, we canceled the exercise. We pulled back into port without the check in the block.
Oh, wow.
They had to go out and redo it. How much time and effort and money did that cost?
Yeah, that's quite a lot.
And why would they do that?
Yeah.
And you know what? I have to tell you. If that's the case and they put me through all this, I'm taking them to court.
Yeah.
I am.
I'm going to quote you on that when
I'm taking
talk to
them to
the
court.
Time.
And you know what I'm going to do with the money? I'm putting it back in the research. I'll take 10% because I'm married now, and you know, there's been times I couldn't even pay my electric bill.
Hmm. Yeah.
Let that sink in.
Yeah.
And but I'm through that, you know?
Yeah.
I went through some pretty hard times.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and another thing I wanted to tell you, do you recall when you were on my show, I'm going to say about a year and a half or so.
Now, you got to understand, my memories was erased because I've had two grand mal seizures since all this.
Oh, okay. Yep. Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. Yep. Okay. Well, maybe you can recall this because you were on with Mick West and I.
Mm-hmm.
And you explained to him why the video of the Tic Tac was not a jet exhaust, and how it would be, it would have been identified as such in from David Fravor. He would have been able to identify if it was. Yeah. Anyway, if just in case you don't recall, Mick West said, "Oh, okay, now I get it. I understand." You know, he was basically saying he was wrong. But I just wanted to tell you, a week later, he was on the news and still going with the same idea. In other words,
bless him. You know, you know what? We need voices like his.
I know you're right.
To keep us all sober on this. It's very easy
balance.
To get carried away with this thing and blow it out of proportion. So, yeah. God bless people like Mick.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really, truly, I really mean that. Yeah. I think people like that keep us all balanced.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. And maybe he knows that too, huh?
Yeah.
Maybe that's why he's doing it.
Well, I think it's probably time we ought to wrap it up.
Oh, it's
getting a little busy, but thank you. Wait a minute. Just thank you so much, and I appreciate it. It's so great to see you again. And
we can follow this up at a different place and time.
Well,
I'm going to be here until tomorrow.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, we'll talk.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
Well, we never followed it up, but that was the interview I had in the Ozark Mountain UFO conference with Kevin Day. And so don't forget, come back on Monday. I have Brandon Fugel on just the day before the release of History's fifth season of The Secret of Skinwalker Ranch. So he'll be coming at 8 p.m., Brandon Fugel, Monday. Next week, we have Ron Janix. I believe that's the name. Yes, Ron Janix up. And thank you all for jumping over to this show from the other one and all that. And we'll be back next week live. Thank you so much. And remember to keep your eyes to the sky.